Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'll be moderating today's webinar on how to use data to improve your collection and contact rates. Collection agencies are sitting on a mountain of data, data that can be used to help make more informed decisions about when to contact someone, what kind of offer to make, and how to try and get in touch with an individual. Today, a panel of credit and collection industry executives will share the secrets that data has shown them and how you can use your data to improve your contact and collection rates. This webinar is being generously sponsored by the Intellitech Group. You get the chance to hear about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the RM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the RM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use, and it's a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Tony Caballero has been the analytics manager at TrueAccord for a year, where he and his team are responsible for generating insights into customer behavior and optimizing conversion of clients' portfolios. Previously, Tony worked at Optimizely and Intel, serving in business intelligence roles at both. While at Intel, he obtained his black belt certification in Lean Six Sigma and is passionate about combining analytics with process improvement. He grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and graduated from Cornell University with a bachelor's degree in operations research engineering. John Harbin is the chief information officer at Frost Arnett. John and his team are responsible for managing the ever-increasing amount of data flowing through the company. Before joining Frost Arnett, he worked in technology-related fields at Nashville-based healthcare companies for more than 10 years. John earned a bachelor's degree in information technology from Middle Tennessee State University and is a certified information system security professional. Angela Holtis has been with American Profit Recovery since 2015 and is now one of the company's work team leaders. She obtained a bachelor's degree in business administration from Baker College. During her years with the company, she has used her skills to move up the ranks within the company. She's demonstrated that settling for what's expected of you isn't an option, and her favorite motto is leaders make leaders. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available later today on accountsrecovery.net. Finally, I just wanted to ask everyone to take a minute and fill out the survey that will pop up on your screen after the webinar is over. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. Participating in the survey helps me develop content that is what you're looking for and help find the speakers you want to hear from. Really appreciate it if you could take a second and fill that out. With that, let's move into today's discussion. Let's first start by framing the conversation. So when we talk about using data to improve collection rates, I'd like to hear from each of you. And John, maybe you could go first. What does data in this context mean to you?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I think you mentioned it at the very beginning. Most of us are sitting on a mountain of data. We know, you know, we have an inventory of consumers that we've sent letters, emails, texts, phone calls to, and whether they resulted in payments. I think you start there with your own inventory. And then there's a ton of vendors that are, you know, willing to sell products based around propensity to pay and bankruptcy and deceased scrubs and things like that that can add to your own inventory. And those two together could help you make better decisions.
Excellent. Thanks, Tony. What about you? How would you define data in this context?
Yeah, so for us at TrueAccord, data is really the foundation behind all the decisions that we make, the way that we run our business. And data isn't just what we know about the account at the time of placement. It's a continuous process that we collect. So data can obviously include your attributes about the account, but it also captures things like engagement. And since we're primarily a digital company, there's a lot there on the engagement piece. Engagement can be anything from email opens, email clicks, inbound emails, inbound outbound phone calls, page views. All these different interactions present opportunities for us to fine-tune our customer experience.
Great, thank you. Angela, what about you? How would you define data?
So in this context, data to me would mean information gathering. So most of the time, the advantage is that the customer provides information. It's a matter of listening to what they're stating. Another thing to consider is collection scores, as well as employment information from auto skip tracing and the best times of day to reach the consumer. So we consider that being 8 a.m., noon, and after 5 p.m.
Okay. Now that we've sort of all sort of set the framework for where everybody's coming from, you know, as we've clearly sort of said already on a couple of different occasions, there's a lot of data out there. Is it all sort of created equally? And if it's not created equally, are some pieces of data more important than others? How do you sort of go about figuring that out? Angela, you want to take that one for us, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually consider all data to be important. Information and information gathering is the key to success. So the more you keep control of the call by gathering information, that can help you to collect the debt sooner than getting the debt paid. And I also think that important questions to ask are simply, where are they working? How many hours a week are they working? And how much they're making? So basically their source of income. And also with that, not only verifying who they are, and that we are actually speaking with the right person, because obviously this will eliminate possible complaints in the future, and making sure that we are in fact speaking with the right person.
Yeah, I agree with Angela. All of the information, you know, it's like pieces of a puzzle, helps you fit that together in how to interact with that consumer in a better way. It comes down to, if you're paying for some of that information, tracking that ROI, and then, you know, then some information may be more important than others. But I totally agree. They all work together to create that picture.
Yeah, I think just to add to that, I think it's also context-driven, depends on what your success metric is. And once you've zeroed in on that, you can then get a better idea of which data points have more significance or maybe more predictive than others. So we definitely pay a lot of attention to that here at True Accord. We go about that in a variety of different methods. We use A/B tests, we use machine learning algorithms. We'll measure correlation between variables across time, see how that might affect our different success metrics for various portfolios. And to kind of more specifically answer the question on how we kind of go about that, I think A/B tests provide a lot of benefit in that we're able to subject our theories and our ideas to the rigor of an experiment. So time and time again, that's proven to be a very useful way to go about it and better understand what works and what doesn't, what's more predictive, what isn't. And Heartbeat, our machine learning platform, is continuously, you know, assigning weights to different variables to better predict outcomes and understand behavior patterns.
A/B testing works pretty much like a champion challenger test, I'm assuming, right, Tony?
Yeah, so with an A/B test, you have essentially a hypothesis you're testing and variations of, let's say, a web page, and you just want to understand which of your variations performs best over a given amount of time against a certain success metric. It could be signups, it could be payments, you know, whichever. And by isolating for different variables and having a control group, you're able to isolate what's driving the difference between those variations. It's interesting because you're able to kind of intersect collections with the scientific method to introduce some extra rigor there to better understand what's happening with your customer experience and what are the big drivers in your business.
Can you give an example, perhaps, of an A/B test that you've done or that you're working on now, and how that, you know, how that test sort of led to, you know, led to a specific change or led to a specific conclusion?
Yeah. So I mean, we have several A/B tests running all the time at TrueCord, but one that was actually pretty surprising to me was when we were experimenting around automated sender names. And we had a few different variations. And what we found was emails that were signed with support@trueaccord.com didn't result in nearly as good of engagement as those that, had that were more personalized. And typically, when you think of like, you know, what kind of steps can you take to improve collections or improve performance? I feel like things that typically come to mind are maybe some big strategy changes, some big changes to your settlement strategy, big changes to staffing. But it's actually pretty amazing how much of a difference you can see in things like collections or engagement just by making really small changes between these variations. So these were just very small changes on how we signed emails. And having worked at Optimizely before here, Optimizely was a A/B testing company. And while I was there, I was analyzing results of millions of different experiments. It never ceased to amaze me how big of a difference you could make in, you know, whatever your success metric was, just by making small variations, small changes to formatting, small variations to how you present your landing page. So even with these small changes in how we present our web pages or how we format them, we can actually still see consistent and measurable results.
Excellent. Well, at this point, I just want to pause the discussion for a moment, and I'd like to invite Daniel Houston from the IntelliTech Group to say a few words. Daniel?
Thanks, Mike. Certainly appreciate being here and appreciate the discussion so far. A little bit about the IntelliTech Group. We're a premier analytics provider for the collections industry. We provide consulting and technology solutions to help agencies work smarter and achieve optimal results. We do this by combining several data sources to provide a robust enrichment program for your accounts. Our foundation of consulting also provides you with a model to make informed decisions about how to work accounts based on evaluation of the data. We've included a few things in today's webinar. First off, a complementary data health analysis. It'd be delivered to you by one of our experienced industry consultants. It's fairly easy to participate. It takes about 5 minutes. You complete a survey. The link's found in the webinar slideshow. Secondly, we've provided an ARM industry data and scoring buyer's guide. If you aren't sure you're getting the best solution, or if you want to see more about what we do or the people we serve, I'd encourage you to download those and reach out with questions you have. I'll be in touch in the next day or two to see how I can assist or what more I can provide. And with that, I'll turn the time back over to you, Mike.
Thanks, Daniel. And thanks again to the IntelliTech Group for sponsoring today's webinar. John, Angela, I'm curious, have you done any of the A/B testing that Tony was referring to? Is that something that you're actively doing or something you've tried or something you're considering perhaps?
Yeah, Mike, we, like I said, champion challenger for a lot of different cases, and some of the same cases that Tony mentioned, small things like changing where the pay now button is on your website, changing the website to be more friendly, things like that. It's been interesting, and, changing phone numbers on letters so that you can track the results of those letters, emails, texts, based on, was that a champion? Was that the challenger? Being able to analyze those results later using things like those phone numbers.
You know what? Our at American Profit Recovery, the first thing that comes to mind that we've been, challenging with and trying to get more positive vibes in the industry is working with Facebook and basically putting videos when we're doing training seminars and getting our name out there. As far as the letters, that's not something that I handle on my level, but that's the first thing that stands in mind to me is that we're trying to make a positive impact with our industry by spreading awareness with our company name. And that's the first thing that came to my mind.
Excellent. I'm curious, Jonathan and John and Tony, where do you get the ideas to come up with sort of like an A/B test? Like, John, you mentioned sort of moving the pay now button. Is that something, you know, someone just says, hey, let's check this? Or is there like a process for how you come up with these ideas? And can you also sort of give a sense of, you know, what a change like that might yield in terms of better contact rates or better collection rates?
Yeah, so specifically the website example, it's something that we had as a long-term project. We knew that it needed to happen, and kind of seeing some other industries that were taking a different approach to it led us to also make a similar change. And it was more around, you know, the compliance end of things and ADA compliance with the website and, you know, being able to meet FDCPA regulations and allow for complaints through our website. You know, so we'd much rather have people complain directly to us as opposed to going to the CFPB or BBB or things like that. And that was the main driving change for us. But I guess to more answer your question, you know, I think it all goes back to that, what you mentioned, or Tony called it AB, but I think in the collections industry, most times we're more familiar with the term champion challenger. You know, you've got your tried and true strategy, this works. And then it's more of, at least here, we haven't gotten as much process around it as we'd like, but just throwing ideas out. And a lot of times it's gut feel. Like, I think that this area of the country or this time of day may yield a different result. Let's at least give that a try and then compare it. So right now for us, at least, it's a lot of that kind of throwing darts and seeing what works, but something we definitely are looking to get some more structure around and more scientific process, like Tony mentioned.
One moment, true record, Tony. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Yes. So as far as how we come up with those ideas and who's responsible for that, I think this ties back to our culture of data where everyone is encouraged to participate. Everyone's encouraged to send ideas in for what kind of experiments to run. It's very much an iterative process. It's ongoing. You're never really done experimenting. You're always coming up with new ideas. And so I really enjoy the collaborative nature of that the whole company participates in. But you'll also see other things that help kind of generate some of the creativity behind these experiments. We might have analysis that has shown certain trends over time, and we want to understand maybe a little bit better what's driving those trends. Or we might have a new feature that we've released that we want to that's been released, that's generated new ideas. So there's a lot of dynamics at play within the company. And there's certainly a lot of people contributing to the different ideas. So there's really no shortage of what we want to experiment with. It's just a matter of prioritizing it and really delivering that customized, personalized experience to the customer.
Excellent. Questions come in, so it's a good time for me to remind everybody, if you have a question for one or all of the panel, type it into your Zoom webinar control panel and we'll try and get to it. But this question on the topic of A/B data, says using internal data for A/B testing can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. How is everybody incorporating accurate and verified external consumer data to drive up right party contact and drive down the time to right party contact to impact the scorecards? Does anyone want to tackle that one?
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure what's being meant by A/B test becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. But we definitely have seen for our A/B tests positive effects with engagement, positive effects with navigating our website. I think what's important there is that you have your success metric clearly identified in advance, so that mm-hmm. you know what your criteria is, how you're going to evaluate the success of those experiments, and you have enough variations as well to control for some of the variables at play, understand what your drivers are going into it. And the other thing that we put a lot of emphasis on as well is doing rigorous look backs of the experiments themselves to ensure that we're getting as much learnings from these experiments. So once they hit statistical significance between whatever variations you have at play, the analytics team then goes in and analyzes those results to see what those learnings are. And after we've implemented it as experiment, we then go back and evaluate, do we want to implement this at a full scale, or what's going to be our follow-up actions from this?
Yeah, I agree with Tony. The number one thing is getting a common definition of what the success metrics are. I've seen it plenty of times where, your COO is pulling numbers that look good, and then somebody else is pulling numbers that look bad, and they're both looking at each other saying, well, how did that happen? So you really have to be careful to make sure that those things are defined and the data is being pulled from the same reporting areas, things like that. And then after that, it really does come down to that scientific process. And some of the agencies and people on the phone may not be large enough to employ their own analytics teams. And so there are vendors that supply that kind of service. But it does get into things like confidence level and statistical significance and things like that to be able to make it not become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Excellent. We've got a couple of more questions that have come in here. Let's see if we can take these now. What's more common for processing and analyzing data? Reporting and analytics from the collection and dialing software, or custom data gathering through programmers in the IT department? Is there a preference or a preferred source of data where it's coming from?
Well, I guess I can give my thoughts on it. So at TrueReport, we use various tools, but the important thing is that you're able to integrate across whatever vendors, across whatever tools. For example, our machine learning platform, Heartbeat, it's taking the output of phone conversations, it's taking in the results of email conversations, it's taking in the results of web page and session views. Even though we have various channels, the important thing is that you're able to consolidate that data somewhere to analyze it. So regardless of what tools you're using, having access to that data ultimately so that you can run analysis is what's important. And the extent to which your systems are integrated will have a big effect as to how easy it is to go about running that analysis. The other thing that will influence that is to what extent is human involvement required in order to run that analysis, in order to gather that data. So those are two big factors that'll, along with whatever tools you're using, will influence how easy it is to get at that data and actually generate some actionable insights out of it.
Okay, next question. What are some of the most important service level agreement metrics that a collection agency should track and measure? That could be a long answer. Are there some priorities, John?
I'm not actually sure, maybe what they're getting at with the service level agreement. Is it with the information vendors that are selling this information?
I think it's more sort of the contracts you have with your client. What's in those, what should you be tracking sort of from, in the service level agreements from that perspective?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I know at least for us here at Frost Arnett, we have some clients that specify things like abandonment rate and things like that. And it is a tool that we can use to, apply the correct amount of effort. So I don't think they're necessarily a bad thing. But that's just what we've seen. It's been mainly the larger clients that have requested things like that.
Got it. Okay. It segues into the next topic I wanted to discuss. And there are a lot of collection agencies that are maybe just getting started, dipping their toe in the water of data analysis, or really haven't sort of dived in yet in any way, shape, or form. So for collection agencies that are looking to get started or are new to the process, how would you recommend they actually sort of get this ball rolling, as it were?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to take two different approaches to it. If you have data analysis staff already employed or someone who's interested in that kind of thing, there are plenty of good software tools. We've already got the data, so it's just using those tools to start splicing and dicing it and finding out that information. Those people that don't have a data analysis staff, or I mean, those are not, you know, those are just some high-paying salaries for people like that. Data scientists don't come cheap. Then, you know, at that point, you're probably better off starting with an external vendor and starting there, and later on deciding whether it's worth building that functionality in-house or not.
Yes, I definitely agree with the importance of having the data analytics staff. I think as far as steps to take, the first thing you want to ask yourself is if the goals that you have are measurable, because if you're missing that, it'll be very hard to know what kind of data to track and what its relevance is. And going back to an earlier point I mentioned, having a database or some sort of repository that takes in the data from your various tools so that you can at least query against it is extremely important. And to reinforce John's statement there that having a dedicated data analyst or having a team dedicated to that is extremely important. Here at TrueAccord, we have data engineers, data scientists, data analysts, integration engineers, and we're all dedicated to really ensuring that we have an effective and efficient flow and use of our data. Because data in the hands of someone who knows how to interpret it and process it and present it is extremely powerful. You're able to really breathe new life into the numbers that way. Because otherwise you run the risk of blurring the line and distinguishing between, am I generating insights or am I just simply showing data? Because data itself isn't really the end goal, it's a means. And the goal is to be able to uncover insights and use that data to generate value for your organization.
Well, that goes to something you were talking about a little bit before, Tony, that I wanted to follow up on, that sort of measuring correlation. How do you kind of make sure that when you've got, you know, you're looking at data or you've got something, you've done your A/B test or you look through your results and you've got, you know, something you think is a conclusion, how do you know whether it is or not, or whether it's just, you know, some anomaly?
Yeah. So I think when you're, anytime you think you've found a relationship, it's good to see how generalizable is that. Does it hold true over time? You know, just because you've seen it once or just because you've seen it in a certain instance doesn't mean you can extrapolate a consistent relationship there. So making sure that that happens and is observable over time is definitely important. But I really would go back and emphasize the utility and the importance of A/B tests here. With the A/B tests, because we do have it running over time and because we do wait for a sufficiently large sample size and statistically significant threshold, we're able to address those concerns of, is this an anomaly or not? So the more rigor you throw at it, the more confident you can be in your conclusions.
Yeah, I think that to add to Tony's too, one other thing that can help out is having some staggered or laddered champion challenger programs where, you know, maybe you've found what you think is a relationship and you want to go ahead and try that out to see how it responds. You know, maybe you test it for a month, but then while that's happening, you also still have your original A/B still going for maybe like a year to make sure that 1 month just wasn't an anomaly, because things like taxis and things like that can definitely change your control variables. So I think it's having, you know, testing it for a month, go ahead and take some action based on it, but also have that test going for 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years to make sure that it doesn't change over time.
Yeah, seasonality, definitely important. That's where understanding your business comes into play. And the other thing too is don't be you know, if you're analyzing data, never be hesitant to walk the process, sanity check the numbers. Actually look at the raw data. If you're doing some sort of correlation on emails or email volumes, it it always helps too to actually read what some of those emails are saying, just to make sure that you're interpreting the data correctly and there's no other hidden variables at play that you might be missing just by looking at things at a high level.
Excellent. Moving on, I'm curious, is there any insights that, you know, sort of analyzing your data or, you know, sort of looking through your results, are there any insights that have surprised you? Angela, maybe you can go first this time. Did we lose Angela? Maybe we did. John, Tony, any of you want to take this one first?
Well, yeah, I can kind of just explain a little bit. I mentioned the tax season, so I think that was a bit surprising for us to actually create strategies around that time of year when people are, you know, getting extra money. That's a time that you probably want to ramp up your efforts. And then directly opposite of that, you know, Christmas time is probably not the best time to be asking for money. People are spending that money elsewhere. So I think that was one of the big things that kind of was surprising. We knew it would probably make a difference, but the magnitude of that difference was surprising for us.
I find myself always being surprised by the outcomes of whatever A/B tests we have. I mentioned the automated sender name experiment that we did. But really, you have to, so something that we see continuously is not all customers behave the same. Portfolios that you might think are more similar than they are different may have surprising deviations in patterns of user behavior and in speed to liquidation. It's always surprising whenever you have a preconceived notion of how a particular portfolio might behave over time, because you have that notion challenged, that kind of encourages you to take a deeper look at the data, at the drivers, to understand what might be behind that shift in whatever trend you're observing, As much as I look at our data, I'm continuously being surprised by what we're finding.
Is that just because you sort of go in with no preconceived notions of what it's going to be, or is it because you do and the results still kind of end up surprising you?
Yeah, I just think there's no shortage of insights to be gained. So every analysis, every experiment presents an opportunity to learn more about your customers, learn more about a given portfolio. So it's the whole experimentation and data process gathering is continuous, it's iterative, and just finding a new insight that you didn't know before, it's just exciting and oftentimes surprising.
Absolutely.
Even if you think that change is really small, that's when it's especially surprising.
Yeah, and I would say that another area that can generate ideas is that anomaly detection. So, you know, we're always talking about wanting to make sure we don't take actions on anomalies, but when an anomaly is, you know, you see something you can't explain and a trend on your champion strategy, it's usually worth taking that out, looking at it, trying to find out what was different during, you know, was it the time period? Was it the letter that we used? You know, was it the volume of contact? Things like that may give you ideas to generate more challenger strategies.
I have a question that came in here that's a good one. For a small agency, what would be the minimum amount of data you should gather and analyze to get started?
Yeah, I would think that, you know, especially for a small agency, cost is going to be a factor. So the more you can do with your own internal information, the better. You know, basing things around last payment date and the amount of the balance, things like that. If you want to look into vendors and external information sources, I would say the one that's been the most valuable for us is the propensity to pay score that a lot of vendors provide. It takes into account a lot of different things, the demographics, where the people live, their occupation, their age, the amount of the balance. So if you want to look at that method, that's been what I would say the quickest, best ROI.
That's interesting. I want to follow up with you for a second there, John. So let's say, agency, I've never done any data analysis before. I've got, a whack of spreadsheets that my software is throwing out, all these reports. Is there sort of some low-hanging analysis fruit? You mentioned propensity to pay. You mentioned a couple other things. Are there some other sort of easy things that I could start with? If I'm doing this on my own, as I start to sort of dive into these spreadsheets?
I'm trying to think of the best place to start. I mean, I guess without sounding like it's too common, I would expect everyone to be know that the people that have paid versus those that haven't paid is obviously the number one thing that you're looking at. From there, I think a lot of it, and you can go very far down the rabbit hole on balance size. You look at and it's going to take a while to find the sweet spot. It may look like a great opportunity with someone with a $20,000 balance, but how likely are you to be able to contact that person? How likely do they be able to pay? How much effort is worth putting into that versus finding that sweet spot? And you're not going to really find that until you start, comparing those two variables, balance size, last payment date, and recovery rate.
Tony, do you have any insights into where, what sort of some of the low-hanging fruit might be in terms of data points?
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's a certain minimum amount of data. I know people focus a lot on the volume of data, but I think just as important is the quality of the data. Is it do you have reliable data integrity? Do you have data do you have historical data? So is it just an instantaneous snapshot or can you actually see how that data has trended over time? I guess another way in which we might look at some data points here at TrueAccord is we have attribute data about the account, but we also have behavioral data about the customer, and that can be anything about their engagement with us. It can relate to what they do on our website. So there's different kinds of data, and I think the attribute data about the account itself gets a lot of attention, but very important for us here at TrueAccord is the engagement data that might shed some light as to the preferences or behavior or what kind of personalized experience the customer wants.
Got it, thank you.
Yeah, I can completely agree with American Profit Recovery. We pay attention to a lot of different things, such as the scoring, and even if they've had a different type of industry debt with us, a lot of times we'll use data from previous conversations where, maybe at one point they have mentioned that they worked at a certain company and were unable to reach them on a client-provided phone number. We may end up reaching out to them at that employer to get in contact with them. And when it comes to the scoring, we use that all the time to decipher in our queue management on how often we're going to be contacting the consumer. We do treat every account the exact same, but ultimately I think on the collector level, the collectors are the boots on the ground, and the most valuable information will come from collector contacts. And the company level stuff isn't exempt to drive the contact. The information gleaned from those contacts are the most important.
Are you talking about the notes from a call that
correct,
a collector
yeah.
has with
so
an individual?
For an example, I guess an example of this would be, let's just say there's a lawn care bill and then a medical bill. At that particular time, if they paid in our office in 2016, and we weren't able to get them on the phone, and now they have an outstanding debt with us from 2019, we may use previous contacts or information from other debt they had with our office to help us to collect the debt.
Got it. Thanks. John, I wanted to follow up with something you mentioned. Does the type of debt or the amount of debt impact the analysis, either the, you know, the depth of the analysis or how much is done?
Definitely. At FrostarNet, we're 100% in the healthcare space. So I think one of the biggest things that we found over time, and I think a lot of it was collaboration with our clients, but there's a huge gulf, a difference between someone who has insurance and there's a residual amount left over versus someone who's 100% self-pay versus Medicare. All of those, what you know, our clients refer to as financial classes, will help us drive strategy based on that.
Okay, good. Another question that's come in from the audience. Do any of you utilize Power, I guess the BI stands for business intelligence, and if you do, how is it best used?
Here at TrueCord, we don't use Power BI. I have used it in the past when I worked at Intel, for example. It got to be a little tough when your data size was really large. So it definitely wouldn't be a good tool here at TrueCord just because we have massive amounts of data. When I was using it at Intel, it was being run locally. And that was fine as long as you don't have just giant amounts of data that would totally slow it down. Power BI also makes an attempt to handle the whole data visualization aspect. So here at TrueCord, we use Looker for data visualization. And that's super useful. It's super user-friendly because what it does is it doesn't require you to know SQL in order for you to convert whatever data we have in our data tables into a easy to consume visualization. And so in that way, we're able to drive a data-driven culture where it's everyone's responsibility identify trends, look at our data, understand our customers, and it really helps with the proliferation of data as well. So once you get to the amounts of data that we're dealing with here, some vendors are definitely better suited to handle that. So I have used Power BI, but it's just it wouldn't be the best application here for us.
Yeah, I mean, we've been experimenting with it here as well. We haven't seen if the data size is going to be a problem for us or not yet, but that's helpful to know. The other big player is Tableau. So I think those are the two that everybody hears most about. There are a ton of others out there, and some old veterans, you know, they're still around too, but they're very expensive. So I don't know if they would be great for the fit for the industry, but like MicroStrategy is another. So yeah, I think Power BI and Tableau are probably the two places everyone starts. And then you find whether that works for you or not and move on and try others until you find one that does.
And with American Profit Recovery, we actually looked into it, and the biggest cost factor is the cost factor. And we realized that we would also need a designated person to dedicate for that. So that's a reason why we haven't decided to do that.
Okay, good. Moving on, we got another question here. Talking about measuring collector performance, can you mention which KPIs, key performance indicators, you use in your scorecards and how you prefer to report, communicate that data to them to know where they are?
Yeah, I know here at Frost, we use some dashboarding around, obviously, number of dollars collected, but you know, also tie in compliance scores, results from the call reviews to make sure, yes, that you're collecting the amount of money, but that you're doing it in a compliant manner as well. I mean, I think that's the two biggest that we use in our scorecarding for our collectors.
Got it, okay. Angela, is that something you do at American Profit Recovery?
Yeah, we look at scorecards when determining many different things.
Okay, good. Moving on. It's impossible to have a webinar these days without talking at least a little bit about compliance. So I'm curious, is there or are there compliance benefits to taking a more analytical approach to your contact and collection strategies?
Yeah, definitely, Mike. There are many TCPA lawsuits that are based around harassment and number of contacts in a certain defined amount of time. So analytics can make sure that you don't exceed any of those limits and use that case law as guidance. And then also that there are plenty of vendors that will sell information on bankruptcies, estates, litigious debtors, things like that, that can help you reduce risk as well.
Yeah, compliance is definitely it's a top priority here at TrueCord, which actually plays really well into our digital business model. We're able to offload a lot of the manual burden around compliance by having Heartbeat scan and ensure that a account will not get worked on unless it meets all the compliance requirements. And on top of that, we have our analytics team, which builds out extensive alerting and controls, and these can be customized and they can be sent out to whoever the stakeholder is. And for example, we're actually pretty involved, when I say we, I mean the analytics team, in onboarding clients by showing some of the controls and compliance reporting that we can set in place. So some of the compliance that comes from clients specifically, by having such a digital and analytical business model, we're able to put a lot of emphasis and rigor into how we control and monitor everything related to compliance.
And I agree. There's plenty of states that have state restrictions, and it's important on the collector level that they pay attention to them. And regardless of the state, we treat the account the same when it comes to information gathering. And ultimately, this is going to help us reduce complaints, both verbally and written, by contacting a consumer at a time that is more convenient for them.
Got it. Jonathan, one of the things you were talking about before were, you know, tests that could last a year, 2 years, 5 years, just, you know, those were the time frames you threw out. Every phone call and every conversation today creates new data points. How can an agency build a system or model that leverages that data, and can it be done in real time?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things that we implement here is like dashboards and trending analysis, so that you can take advantage of some of that information more quickly, so that you're not, you know, waiting 2 or 3 years to make sure something is statistically relevant before you put it into action, that you can start making some of those experiments more quickly. But, you know, realizing that some of those ones that you've only evaluated an anomaly for a month, that, you know, you may be chasing your tail and something that's going to, you know, that wasn't an anomaly, doesn't hold up over time, but at least you're able to do something more quickly instead of, you know, that analysis paralysis.
Analysis paralysis, I love that term. Tony, what about at TrueCord? Are you incorporating your data in real time? Is there a lag? How does it work there?
Yeah, so luckily, because our machine learning platform Heartbeat is so integrated and connected, it's able to react with extremely fast turnaround times based on, let's say we had a customer click on a certain email or open a certain email, then which led that person to send an inbound email request or call in. The result of that is logged and sent back to Heartbeat, and Heartbeat responds accordingly. It's a very tight integrated sequence of events that that allows for a minimalization of of human dependency. So that kind of goes back to a point that I made earlier, two big factors that will influence how quickly you can turn around some of these, how quickly you can turn data into insight, into action, is the extent to which your systems are integrated and to the extent that they're dependent on human involvement.
Just got a few more minutes left. So if anybody has any other questions, now is probably your last chance to type it in, and we'll try and get it before the panel, before we wrap up. What I'd like to do now is maybe go around the panel and get a sense for, I'm trying to think of the right way to say this, how to adopt, I think we've talked about it a little bit here today, is sort of adopting a culture of sort of innovation, a culture of data. Is that something that you're actively doing at your agency, especially John and Angela, because you tend to have more collectors than True Accord will, but is it something you're actively doing, or is it something you're aspiring to do?
Yeah, Mike, it's something that we've started doing more of. In the past, we kind of started with like suggestion box, anonymous things, if they needed to be, that could be reported through our internal intranet. One of the things we've been discussing lately is some way to reward good ideas without adding too much red tape to the process, where now you have to have a analysis board that determines which one had the highest ROI, things like that. Every time we talked more about it, we what-ifed it to death. But then we kind of just wanted to make it simple. If, if someone puts in a good suggestion and we implemented it and we know it had a good impact, then do things like spot bonuses. Show that is rewarded, and you create a culture where people will make more suggestions.
Yeah, and with American Profit Recovery, one of the biggest things that we do here is we have what's known as bright ideas. And during this process, we definitely take everything into consideration. If a collector, or really anyone on the floor, it could be any department, and anything from admin to customer service, if there's anything that they come across that they think could benefit the company as a whole, and some of the best internal changes that we have has taken place from bright ideas. And with that, we actually also bring it up in our interview process to make it known that we do take everything into consideration, from the bottom up and top down. Everybody's opinions do matter, and that's where change starts.
Can you give an example? You mentioned some of the bright ideas, something that's been implemented from that.
Well, we've had, I'm trying to think of a most recent one. We did have an employee that, he made a suggestion that, I'm trying to think of what Joe's most recent one was. So I guess goals would probably be the best thing. So, we're always doing different types of incentives. So we all know that primetime evening calls is one of the best ways to get contacts, because consumers are driving home, or they're off work. So recently we did a bagels. So for anyone that stayed after 5 o'clock, we brought them bagels the next day. Last week or two, we ordered pizza. So we do different incentives, because we've had plenty of collectors actually suggest that, and we've been noticing big improvements in that. And another thing that we do here that I think is really cool is I run what's known as the best practice meeting, where we go over different topics throughout the industry and things that collectors are facing on the floor. So if there's something that, they're uneasy with, or they feel that they could benefit from learning more, it's their chance to submit the idea to us and let them know, could you go over this? And with those people that come to those meetings before we start our workday, because we start at 8 o'clock, so we ask them to come in at 7:30, and we'll take a half an hour, two times a month, go over these, and as an incentive to get them to come in, we'll offer casual for the rest of the for the next day.
Excellent, thanks. Well, we've got a comment here from one of the attendees. The comment is, for general consumption, choose a good vendor because they can guide you through the data and recalculate results on a regular basis. They also mentioned one of the better vendors is the sponsor of this webinar, that's the IntelliTech Group, and they're speaking from practical experience, so that was good to hear. What I'd like to do before we wrap up today is go around the panel and maybe just sort of either summarize what you know your points from today, or talk about something you didn't get a chance to talk about, or maybe offer any tips or advice to people that are just sort of getting started in this, and how to approach it, and how to, you know, what to be looking for, but any sort of parting words of wisdom. Maybe Tony, you could go first.
Yeah, and just to add some final thoughts on your culture of data, we've been able to achieve that by highlighting the importance of everyone being able to contribute and empowering others so that they can self-service more of their own data requests, so that they can understand how to navigate our tools. So I mentioned that we use Looker. We'll have Looker training sessions for the entire company. We'll have SQL training sessions for the company. We definitely want to be able to empower others so that we can decentralize that role of analytics, because you definitely don't want your analytics team and your analysts to be the bottleneck. And so the best way to do that is to empower others. So I would definitely highlight the importance of that as being an important step in your evolution of a collections agency that's looking to leverage data more across your whole organization. To summarize some of my earlier points, it's definitely having access to the data, absolutely important, but just as important there is the quality of your data, and because if you can't rely on it, then how can you possibly trust the conclusions that you're drawing? And also making sure that the goals that you have are indeed measurable. But yeah, absolutely, step one is having that data, because as I'm sure everyone has heard time and time again, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it.
Good point. How about Angela?
So I think one of the biggest points that I'd like to bring up is that I feel it's very important too to have departments that communicate with one another. So it's one thing to have the data, but it's to use it properly. So if there's something that, you know, IT, you know, if the collector is noticing something that they need addressed, or if a manager is trying to review an account and we have data available, you know, I think it's really important that the two communicate with one another, because if the manager can't do their job in assessing and making sure that the collectors are doing their job to the best of their ability, then having the data does nothing if the two teams aren't working together. And we do a very good job here where if a collector has an idea, we communicate it with the ITs that we have here, and 9 times out of 10, we're able to come across with a report or something to make our life easier, which really benefits us.
Absolutely. John, you get the last word today.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I would say one thing too that we have found is, not only is this type of data, you know, useful for your strategies, but we've found that letting our clients know some of the insights that we've found has been a value add for them, and something that we've thought about selling as a product. Especially around, I talked earlier about those financial classes, giving them insights that they didn't know about their own data, as well as helping improve data collection. When you're able to give a report back to a client saying that this was our recovery percentage, and did you know that you're sending us 32%, of your consumers are bad addresses. A lot of times these people that we're talking to don't know that and are able to make changes on the front end to get that more quality data, like Tony said.
That's a great piece of advice. Thank you for sharing. Before I let everybody go, I want to thank Tony, Jonathan, and Angela for their insights and their time today. Really appreciate them taking the time to share their perspective and their strategies and techniques with us. Also wanted to thank the IntelliTech Group one more time for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.intellitechgroup.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions. Final reminder to take a minute to fill out the feedback survey for today's webinar. Really appreciate that. A recording of this event will be posted on Accounts Recovery later today. Panel, thank you very much for joining me. Really appreciate it today.
Great, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great day. We'll talk to you soon.